The New York Knicks are your NBA Finals champions. First time in 53 years, the Knicks have won it all. Oh, my God. Tom Haverstraw and I get into every single angle from this epic, epic NBA Finals. Another down-to-the-wire game. Another comeback. Down 16 this time. Not quite 29 like Game 4, but down 16 points. Knicks come back and win the NBA Finals. So Tom and I get into this Knicks roster, how incredible they were, and then for the Spurs, what they did to get here, but what they have to do to get over the top sometime in the future. That's all coming up right now with me and Tom Haverstraw. The New York Knicks have won the NBA Finals. Joining me to discuss it all, Tom Haverstraw. Wow, Tom. Oh, my goodness.
They did it. Whew. They did it. Jalen Brunson. Jalen Brunson. What a performance. 45 points in a closeout game. I can't believe it. I can't believe the gutsy performance from Jalen Brunson, Kev. Incredible.
The Knicks couldn't have won it any other way. They trail by 16 in the game. They end the game with a 21-9 run in the fourth quarter. Jalen Brunson, 45-point masterpiece, hit clutch shot after clutch shot. He had the play where he just kind of shimmied, stopped, and started on Wemby with the layup. He had the floater, the drawn foul on the three. Unbelievable. On a night where Karl-Anthony Towns was in constant foul trouble, they had the extender working against them. No, no flagrant on Wemby. Yeah. I mean, are you kidding me? And yeah, here we are. First title in 53 years.
It really is incredible. I'm watching him hug his parents now. His dad, Rick Brunson, obviously the second, the assistant coach for the New York Knicks. Just an incredible story for the NBA. A second round pick who was passed over by just about every team in the NBA has to back up Luka Doncic for much of his career and beg the Dallas Mavericks to give him a big contract. And he goes to the Knicks and becomes immortal. One of the best Knicks ever. He, Patrick Ewing, Walt Clyde Frazier, Willis Reed, he's now in the Mount Rushmore, where just 5 years ago, I don't think anyone could have foreseen that Jalen Brunson not only would be a champion with the New York Knicks, but the finals MVP for the New York Knicks, a guy that so many teams just said, nah, and he overcame so much to be at this position in this league. It's a remarkable story. 45 points. It's the third most we've ever seen in a clinching finals performance. Giannis Antetokounmpo in 2021 had 50, 14, and 5 blocks in that closeout game against Phoenix. Bob Pettit, 70 years ago in 1958, he had a 50-piece with 19 rebounds. But Jalen Brunson, man, at 6'2", maybe, being by far the gutsiest, strongest, most steady player. In a rock fight, he was as steady as a rock as you've ever seen in an NBA Finals. Just incredible.
I mean, there are so many great athletes in New York sports history. Babe Ruth, Lawrence Taylor, Derek Jeter, Clyde Frazier, Joe DiMaggio, Mickey Mantle, a lot of them for the Yankees. Joe Namath, right? Like Eli Manning of the New York Giants. There's a long list of them.
Yep.
Jalen Brunson joins that list for sure. And skyrockets possibly to near the top of it, especially after a performance like this one, Tom. I mean, really, it was a, you know, David versus Goliath in some ways, given he's going against the 7'7" Victor Wembanyama and that San Antonio Spurs defense. And for him to score and create shots in the way in which he did down the stretch of this game, I mean, look, the fact is, Tom, I mean, OG Anunoby, after game 4, people are saying, OG, maybe he's the finals MVP. He's 11 points tonight on 3 of 11. Karl-Anthony Towns, after the first two games, after the Knicks took 2 in San Antonio, Cat tonight, 2 points on 1 of 7 in 24 minutes because he was in constant foul trouble. A lot of poor fouls by him. Josh Hart, 13 points on 4 of 11. Mikal Bridges, 14 points of 5 of 10. The Knicks didn't have a single point from a bench player until Jordan Clarkson had a shot with 39 seconds in the third quarter. They win this game because of Jalen Brunson. Of course, they're here because of a group team effort. But Jalen Brunson, took him past the finish line, and he got better throughout this series, Tom. It looked like he got hurt for game one, first quarter, and he continued to get better and got to adjust, I think, to Wemby and that defense with his ability to get into the mid-range and to the paint. Just remarkable, man. I mean, what a story, like you detailed, Tom, right? He was a backup. He was a backup, a second-round pick, four-year player out of college, and here he is, a New York sports hero with one of the best closeout games we've seen. It's just awesome. It truly is awesome.
How many kids were born today with the first name Brunson? I mean, come on. And this guy, it's an incredible story. And he had 29 points in the second half alone. And we're talking about a guy who turned his ankle, not just the physical resiliency and the perseverance after Victor Wembanyama clearly deserved to get a flagrant foul in the landing zone rules underneath Jalen Brunson there in the second half. And then he overcomes that. He hits the shot, by the way, overcomes that and continues to play on an ankle that looks like a paperclip and just bending the wrong way. And he did not complain at all when it came to like limping down the floor. He just kept playing. And yes, he protested to the officials, as he should have been, because think about it. You've got not only the extra free throw that you could get in that situation, not only would it suspend Victor Wembanyama, but it also would, I mean, you're talking about an injury rule that like was put into place because of the Zaza Pachulia thing. And there's every reason for him to let his emotions get the best of him. And if anything, it made him even sharper down the stretch. I mean, I don't know how many players in the NBA we've ever seen have that kind of mental fortitude to put the team on his back and get to the rim, hit big shots, and do it on a gimpy ankle. I don't want to hear about De'Aaron Fox's ankle sprain anymore after what we saw from Jalen Brunson throughout this series, throughout the postseason. Just an absolute, like an Iron Man performance. We have to sit here, Kevin O'Connor, and marvel at Jalen Brunson and what he's done for this New York Knicks franchise and the New York City, I mean, as a whole. He's healed a lot of wounds. John Starks, Larry Johnson, all these historic players, Patrick Ewing, they did not win the big one. And here is Jalen Brunson healing those wounds for everyone in attendance, for Allen Houston. I mean, how many Knicks fans were in attendance tonight that are looking at Jalen Brunson and saying, thank you?
It looked like a 50-50 crowd tonight, Tom. Didn't it?
Yeah.
It sure did, man. I mean, I remember like after game one, I attended that one. I didn't attend game two. I was walking through the concourse before the game. I'm like, huh, there's a lot of Knicks fans here. It must be like a quarter, something like that. Maybe 15, 20%, but close to a quarter. Looking at the crowd for watching from home tonight, you see a lot of blue and orange. It looked like at least 40, 45, possibly 50%. You could hear it on the broadcast, the spikes in volume anytime the Knicks made a big run, and of many they made in the second half of that game to crawl their way back and eventually take the lead and win it all. It felt like a Knicks home game a lot of the time for this game. And to see, it's pretty cool to see the Knicks win it in San Antonio. San Antonio doesn't win a single home game in the series. To win it in San Antonio in a way that looks like a home game. I'm seeing a view right now of Jalen Brunson with Knicks fans behind him in the crowd. Still pretty full in the lower bowl during the ceremony. It's a lot of Knicks fans there. So, I mean, pretty cool. A lot of them were able to be there for this game tonight. Pretty unusual. It's not usually like this when a team wins on the road. We're about to find out. We're watching this, recording this immediately post-game. Adam Silver at the podium. I'm assuming Jalen Brunson gets the finals MVP here. Oh. I would be shocked any other way if it weren't Jalen Brunson. But ultimately, like this, the Knicks, this team, they get to this point, Tom, because of the collective roster. Karl-Anthony Towns, two amazing first two games, getting them to this point, putting the ball in his hands in the middle of the first round in the Atlanta series. OG Anunoby, not the best night for him in this game five, but so many clutch plays, even just besides the putback at the end of the game four, even putting that aside, one of the greatest rebounds in Knicks history, the clutch shots at the end of the shot clock when he would bail them out throughout the series. I think these guys, Mikal Bridges, finding himself earlier in the playoffs after struggling at many points during the regular season. Guys off the bench, Jose Alvarado, a gutsy trade deadline decision up and down this roster. Mitchell Robinson, the big offensive rebound after the missed free throw. He just big boyed Wemby on the play to grab that board.
Yeah, they big boyed the Spurs in this series. Is when push came to shove, quite literally, the Knicks won those battles. And I don't know if we've ever had this, Kev. I know since it's been several years that we've had the first four games be all in clutch. Final 5 minutes, game within five. We got another one in game five here, and the Knicks won four out of the five. And that to me is a testament to the Knicks with Jalen Brunson. I can't say it's just veteran leadership. I think it is the resolve of these guys. They've had this continuity since the last few years. Think about the addition to this team. Usually we see with title teams, Kevin, a new player come into the fold to put them over the top. I'm thinking about Alex Caruso and Isaiah Hartenstein for the Oklahoma City Thunder last year. But we didn't really see that. I don't want to count Alvarado in this conversation. What we're really seeing is a team that got their hearts broken by the Indiana Spurs in game seven last year fire their head coach, and what a performance by Mike Brown. I felt like Mike Brown pushed all the right buttons in this series, and Mitch Johnson, having Victor Wembanyama on the bench with 5 minutes left in a closeout game and De'Aaron Fox onto the floor, I could not believe my eyes that we are in this position watching Victor Wembanyama on the bench as Jalen Brunson's making play after play after play. And Mike Brown trusted his guys and they delivered in the biggest moments. Just an incredible story for Mike Brown, Jalen Brunson, and a team that I severely doubted at many points this regular season. And they just put together one of the greatest postseasons ever.
I'll tell you what, Tom, you mentioned the gutsy decision to fire Tom Thibodeau and hire Mike Brown. That to me, that's what this Knicks team is about. It was just a series of gutsy decision after gutsy decision, even going back to acquiring Jalen Brunson and paying him in the first place. You can talk about the CAA connection, the Rick Brunson connection and all that. There was no guarantee that Jalen Brunson, after his time in Dallas, would turn into the superstar that he has with the New York Knicks. It wasn't a guarantee, but they took that calculated risk. They paid a lot to go get Mikal Bridges. They made a really savvy trade to go get OG Anunoby, Emmanuel Quickley, and RJ Barrett, who was still a very good young player at the time. Like trading a pick, a first rounder, to go get Josh Hart from Portland, who seemed like a flawed player. Can he play in the playoffs? Yes, he can. He has proven that. Getting these moves around the edges, like the drafting Deuce McBride, granted he didn't have the biggest playoff, but trading for Jose Alvarado, some of these decisions around the edges of the roster, even Adam Landry Shamet, who had some moments in the postseason for the Knicks. This Knicks front office nailed it with their decisions that they made year by year, and ultimately it came to firing Tom Thibodeau and hiring Mike Brown, an unbelievable coaching upgrade. That game four, running with Jose Alvarado down the stretch of the game, that is not something you would have seen Tibbs do. The flexibility in the moment tonight in this game five to be able to manage foul trouble around Karl Anthony Towns and pull the right strings, when to go with Mitchell Robinson, when to go with Huck Porty, when to go with small ball with OG at the five.
Sohan played clutch moments.
I was like, is Mike he nuts? Brown. Yes. Mike Brown's a genius. Oh my God. He really is a genius.
I mean, he pressed all the right buttons. We even got a Leon Rose press conference just now at the NBA Finals. That's how crazy this is. The first time he's talked to the media or to the public on the record and ever as a New York Knicks.
That's what his voice sounds like. Even more of a surprising voice than Mitch Johnson.
Man,
more surprising
the Camden connection,
voice.
Man. Camden connection, when we're talking about Leon Rose, World Wide West, the Brunson, the North New Jersey, the Elizabeth, I mean, you had Karl Anthony Towns. I laughed about it. I joked about it. Just the CAA connection and everybody taking care of each other. But I think there is some upside there, is that they have inside knowledge about what these players want. Leon Rose was representing Karl Anthony Towns and got him the big maximum contracts that he was getting, represented so many of these players in the league. He knows how these players think about what it takes to win at the highest levels and what makes these players tick. And so I laughed about it. Just like, oh, they got OG Anunoby, another CAA guy, and they got him for no first round picks into the deal. It's a heist. But really, what can OG Anunoby do in this environment? Is this just another case of cronyism, of favoritism, and ultimately they're getting the last laugh? Anyone who got a laugh at the Knicks and the CAA connection, you can't deny that agency and that Leon Rose taking over for basketball operations at the time that he did, an amazing transformative reign by Leon Rose. And you're right, hitting on all of those moves in a time where I think many people expected, hey, it's not just Tom Thibodeau, maybe a player shakeup, Mikal Bridges, and Karl Anthony Towns. Can you really rely on him as your starting five? And the answer is absolutely. They're world champions now. And they just did it over Victor Wembanyama and the referee crew in this game.
over the final 7:54 of game five, the Knicks outscored the Spurs 21-7. In those minutes, San Antonio had a 37.3 offensive rating. They were 3 of 16 from the field, 1 of 5 at the rim, 0 of 3 from three-point range, 1 of 4 from the free throw line. Knicks, meanwhile, had a 123.2 offensive rating down the stretch of the game. Once again, Tom, the Knicks put the clamps on. That happened. But also San Antonio, just an absolute, utter collapse. It's happened throughout this finals. We saw it to the greatest extreme in game four with a 29-point lead when they fell in love with the three-pointer. And it happened again tonight, to a lesser extent, 16-point lead at one point in the game, and then just completely pissing down the side of their leg in the fourth quarter. And you mentioned it in passing earlier, Tom. Wemby goes out of the game around 5 minutes left, and then first play, De'Aaron Fox just bricks a shot. And he down the stretch of the game was 0 for 4. I don't really have a good explanation for why Mitch Johnson stuck with him in the way that he did, other than two things. A, he's just one of those prototypical coaches that's like, I'm going to favor my vet. I'm going to favor the former All-Star. I'm going to favor this guy. And I'm not going to trust a rookie down the stretch of the game. Dylan Harper, by the way, 1 of 5. Over these final 8 minutes as well. He himself was not effective down the stretch of the game. Castle stunk it up. His only make was that putback in the final 30 seconds of the game. So to be fair to Mitch Johnson in the situation, De'Aaron Fox wasn't the only one struggling. Harper had an excellent game, though, to be fair, overall. So I'm going to ignore that end of the game situation. I think Mitch Johnson just made a mistake here, Tom. It didn't feel to me like he was giving his team the best opportunity to win, relying on this veteran player who's struggling, who's making bonehead errors and mistakes, who is also hurt as well. It's either just sticking with the veteran, or we talked about agencies with the Knicks with CAA, or it's just a clutch sports thing, because Mitch Johnson is clutch sports and De'Aaron Fox is clutch sports. And so is the GM, by the way, Brian Wright. I just fail to understand how they didn't optimize their chances of winning this game in this series by leaning more on Harper, who was by far, over the duration of the game, the far more effective guard and shot creator.
Oh, and Julian Champagne should have gotten way more minutes down the stretch and ability to hit threes. He's the only guy who could hit shots down in this game. And a lot of those minutes were going to De'Aaron Fox, who in this four quarters with the season on the line, before this game, Mitch Johnson gave him the utmost, the strongest endorsement by saying, hey, At the end of the game in game five, I'm going to put the ball into De'Aaron Fox's hands, and he fumbled it away. 3 of 15 in this game. He had in the last half, 2 of 8 shooting in the game four, 2 of 8 shooting. So that's 5 of 23 in the last 6 quarters with 5 turnovers. And I didn't feel like that it was that good. Like 5 of 23 seems like even better than I thought it would be, considering how many open shots that he bricked in the last couple games. It's not that he was taking tough shots at the rim and continuously making plays for Victor Wembanyama and just kind of making these positive plays out there and it just not going in. I didn't feel like he was making positive EV plays throughout the night. And again, tell it to Jalen Brunson that De'Aaron Fox's ankle was too tough, too much in pain to perform at a high level. And I brought it up in the last stream after game four. I was there when Eric Spoelstra was way too conservative when it came to yanking Mike Bibby in 2011. Mike Bibby, acquired at the deadline, was waived by the Washington Wizards. The Miami Heat picked him up and started him the rest of that season. And Eric Spoelstra and the Miami Heat just time and time again kept him out on the floor. And then finally, in the final game of the season, made the switch to remove Mike Bibby from the starting lineup. And he didn't play a single minute in that game. And he relied on Mario Chalmers, who was outplaying him throughout the postseason. And it was too late, too little, too late. And that's what entered my mind, Kevin, watching this performance again from De'Aaron Fox. The boneheaded plays, the miscues, the push in the back into Josh Hart in the open court to get a flagrant. I thought he should have been benched the rest of the game right there. What a dumb play by a veteran who was brought in to be a stabilizing performer in the biggest moments, and just a complete rookie move, a complete rookie last 6 quarters for De'Aaron Fox. And he should have gotten the Mike Bibby treatment down the stretch. But already Mitch Johnson was doubling down, and he was going down, burning the boats with De'Aaron Fox. And unfortunately, it sunk them in this game.
And we'll be right back after this break.
Maybe we're being too apologetic for Victor Wembanyama. We haven't talked about him, but De'Aaron Fox is the one who shot 3 of 15 in this game and was a total non-factor. And Victor Wembanyama, unfortunately, just it was not the dynamic performance down the stretch that we all imagine. If he's getting those breaks every 2 minutes, you would at least expect some better performances down the stretch. But getting bullied by Mitch Robinson under the basket was one of those oh my God moments that he will be up at night seeing Mitchell Robinson for days, weeks over the summer.
And then he went 1 for 2 from the free throw line as well. I thought there was a chance he might go 0 for 2 again, like he did last game. I thought that might actually have a shot at happening. He obviously made the second one. Took 2 big deep breaths for that one. He took his time, Tom, unlike game four, as you described after that game. Yeah, look, I everything you said about Fox, you know, I agree with. We can talk a little bit later about what the Spurs should do with him. Spoiler alert, they should trade his ass. we can save that for later. I think I do want to hit Wemby now, though. Wemby, obviously sensational player. I'm a Wemby guy. I voted him MVP. And he's in the finals at 22 years old in the third year of his career. So, like, he's got a lot of growing to do, and most of the all-time greats do take their lumps first. They don't win their finals on a first shot, never mind make the finals in their first playoffs. So it's an accomplishment in its own right to be here. That said, the pass off the back of Castle at the end of game two, the choke at the end of game four, the inability to create his own shot, and the durability aspect. He had 5 blocks and what, the first 15 minutes of the game, none after that. I felt like there's been a lot of times where he's just got pushed around, including on the Mitchell Robinson offensive board in the final minute. You can say that Mitch Johnson should have had Cornette on Mitchell Robinson, and Wemby is the guy to clean up the board. You could argue that, but Wemby was in that position, and he failed to hold off Mitchell Robinson. The inability to create a shot, the strength, it does go to show, Tom, how far he still has to come as a player, particularly on the offensive end of the floor. He does not have a go-to move. He does not have a go-to spot that he wants to get to on the floor too often. I still feel like he falls in love with the jumper. He had that a mid-range fadeaway at one point earlier in that fourth quarter. I think it was at the 7:20 mark or something like that. And this is around the time where the Knicks were really building momentum. It was at the start of their 10-0 run in that 7-minute mark. And it was shortly before Brunson had that crazy finish where he stopped and started to create space against Victor Wembanyama. And I think after that Wemby, if I remember correctly, after that Wemby fadeaway, Brunson got the ball and beat Wemby up the floor. And there's just so many times I'm like, why are you settling? That's a win for the defense. Tim Legler, I think, pointed it out. At one of the points in the second half of that game, Wemby took a three-pointer where he was kind of like holding the ball, looking around, and then hoisted up a three-pointer. And Legs or RJ had mentioned that's a tough three to make when you're stationary and then you launch it. Wemby, I felt like he was just giving the Knicks exactly what they wanted a lot of the times in the game. And that's where experience and growth needs to happen. But boy, he's got a long way to go offensively in order to come through in these clutch end game situations at this level of basketball.
Okay. I'm going to, I had some stray thoughts here. I really had this thought in the middle of this game. Do they need Chris Paul? Because I couldn't believe how hard it was to get Wemby the ball in the paint. And I know we've gotten a lot of laughs at Chris Paul expense in San Antonio last year, but I couldn't believe how difficult it was. There was a Stephon Castle drive late in the game where he had an easy lob for Victor Wembanyama when they collapsed on a Castle, and just he could not get the ball. Two shots into the paint in the fourth quarter, two three-pointers. He had 27 three-pointers. Three-point attempts in this series, second most by any player against a team that the New York Knicks, no one's confusing them for the Twin Towers of the Rockets or of the San Antonio Spurs with David Robinson and Tim Duncan. Victor Wembanyama has to get better positioning, certainly has to play more in the paint. He can't blame this all on the guards, but for De'Aaron Fox to get a max contract to be acquired at last year's deadline, to be the replacement for Chris Paul and be the guy who's going to get Victor Wembanyama those lobs and those downhill attacks and making sure he gets the ball on those post-ups. De'Aaron Fox is not a pure point guard. Never was a pure point guard. And I'm starting to wonder, like, is Stephon Castle going to be able to develop in this area enough? And Dylan Harper, certainly, as far as bully downhill drivers, I can't think of many others that have been this good since, Derrick Rose, peak Russell Westbrook, just the ability, peak Ja Morant, where the ability to get to the cup and finish strong. We never see a guy this young do this. It's the most points by a 20-year-old or younger since Magic Johnson. Like, what he's done in this finals as a scorer certainly is just about unprecedented in the modern era. But, Kevin, Victor Wembanyama has to be stronger, and the point guards have to be better at getting him. Yeah, you're seeing it here. 90 points by Dylan Harper in the finals, most ever. Outside of Magic Johnson in 1980, of course, with 129 points in that incredible performance from Magic 45 years ago. Now what we're seeing is, are the Spurs going to be okay with Victor Wembanyama getting just two shots in the paint in the fourth quarter of a closeout game? Or they're going to have to upgrade and get a more, I don't know, like Jose Alvarado, a guy who's just out there to get his best players the ball in the right places. It's things like that. I'm sitting there watching the game and just wondering, can they get somebody to get Wemby the ball? And of course, he has to be better. He can't settle for mid-range jumpers and three-pointers every time. But I also believe the Spurs have a playmaking problem that was exposed by the strength and the leadership by the New York Knicks, they refused to let Wemby get the ball in the paint. And that was one of the biggest reasons why they dropped this game. And down the stretch, they can't get him high percentage shots somehow.
Yeah, I think that's spot on, Tom. I mean, that is a portion of it here. Part of it is going to just have to be on Wemby. When you know, you and I, at different points, have both called him the best player in the world. The best player in the world needs to be able to create his own shot. And I'm not quite sure he showed I'm the best player in the world in this series. That's just the reality of it. I think it's up for grabs. I think it still could be SGA, still could be Jokic, still could be Wemby. I think he's in that conversation still, given how special he is on the defensive end of the floor. But I do think the Knicks did show a bit of a formula here, figuring it out over the course of the series, stretching him out at times, pulling him out of the paint, spacing him out. Cat, with those first two games of the series as well, was really effective. So I do think we did see a little bit of the formula against Victor Wembanyama in this game, on top of the fact, as Jeremy Sochan said before the series, rough him up, be tough with him. He gets tired. That happens. That did happen. His defensive impact did diminish over the course of these games. It was 10 out of 10 in the first quarter. I mean, it's not a coincidence the Spurs went up 10 points in all five games in the first quarter. That's in part because of that early impact you see from Wembanyama on the defensive end of the floor. But it's almost like a little bit of rope-a-dope in some ways. You know, let them punch themselves out of it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, we saw a bit of that here with Wemby. And ultimately for him, he's got a lot of growing to do. This Spurs team, I think, like Devin Vassell, like Castle had a crappy game five, but he was really good overall. There's questions about Keldon Johnson, the sixth man of the year. How impactful is he at the playoff level, at this deep level of basketball? And De'Aaron Fox, of course. I mean, look, he's got a Big Max contract coming up, and he's supposed to be your veteran. The guy, to your point, is supposed to be creating easy shot opportunities for Victor Wembanyama, and he's unable to do that. He does not make up for it defensively. He made so many just bonehead decisions. If I were a Spurs fan, Tom, oh man, if I were a Spurs fan, I would have so much hate in my heart for De'Aaron Fox. I'm not going to lie. I mean, if I were a Spurs fan, I wouldn't be able to watch him in a Spurs jersey next season. He has to go if I'm a Spurs fan. And when I put myself in the shoes of those fans, I just don't see how you could expect this team to reach the next level with De'Aaron Fox. I don't. I don't care that he was hurt. To your point, Tom, Brunson was hurt. There's a bunch of guys hurt. We're going to hear about injuries to guys that we don't know about. De'Aaron Fox, he didn't play like the veteran. He played like the rookie, the inexperienced player. And ultimately for San Antonio, when he's got that massive salary, they got to turn that into something in order to take the next step. That's what these teams do. The Knicks, they traded Randall for Karl Anthony Towns. A big move, because they felt like that wasn't enough to take the next step. They make these smart additions around the edges of the team, and the big one, Randall for Cat. The Spurs need to make that move now. That's what they learned in this postseason, particularly in these finals, in order to take the next step. It can't be De'Aaron Fox. For my own sanity, if I'm a Spurs fan, but also just from a pure team-building perspective, it's not going to work with him. He's not the guy.
He's not the guy. And I wrote about it after game four, that they have a De'Aaron Fox problem, and people thought I was being too harsh, that they don't get to where they are without De'Aaron Fox. And I would argue they got to where they are, not in spite of De'Aaron Fox, but it certainly wasn't because of De'Aaron Fox. I think he was an above average player for much of that season, but certainly not worth a max contract. Certainly not worth all of that, the capital that they put into him. And when we've heard Rich Paul, the CEO of Clutch Sports, on his podcast talk about how they kind of diagrammed this years in advance, of saying, I want one of my guys to be, one of my clients to be on the Victor Wembanyama team. And whether mm-hmm. it was Darius Garland didn't want to do that. He didn't want to be the second fiddle, reportedly. And De'Aaron Fox said, I want to be there. And now you're seeing why, because they gave him a $220 million contract that pays him $50 million next year and $60 million in 2029, 23, and 2030. And look, yes, the cap is going up, But that's going to be a huge area of concern. If you are Mitch Johnson and Brian Wright, when you're looking at this organization, can you expect that De'Aaron Fox is going to be better next year when he is not the same athleticism that he used to be? He used to be the fastest guy in the NBA, and you saw that OG play at the end of game four. He thinks he's that guy. He's not that guy. He's not that guy anymore. And I think it's going to take a realization. You make a great point about the Julius Randle comp, is that the Knicks decided, look, Karl Anthony Towns certainly has his warts. He has had not the best moments in the postseason, but we still think that he can be an acquisition that can get us over the top. And the San Antonio Spurs have to find that player who is going to get them over the top, that Julius Randle is the De'Aaron Fox for that Knicks team. And now you're going to see the San Antonio Spurs have to go figure out who's going to take this De'Aaron Fox contract. Not going to be easy. And what you're seeing is a league that just watched De'Aaron Fox collapse down the stretch and really not be able to play at a high level. And it's only going to get more expensive on your cap. So my question is, you know, we talked about this on Yahoo Sports Daily yesterday, on Friday, when it came to De'Aaron Fox suitors, what do? You got to throw some picks into there to make it worthwhile for another team. The team that I identified in this was Dallas Mavericks with Kyrie Irving and PJ Washington.
Oh, disgusting.
Kev.
Gross. Why would De'Aaron Fox
on $220 million. Are you going to be able to stomach that more than Kyrie and PJ Washington going forward?
No, I'm saying if I'm Dallas, I'm throwing up in my mouth. No. Okay, I want Kyrie.
So who is it?
I want to stick with Kyrie. I don't know. That's the tough part here. It's really hard.
We can sit here until our face is blue that they need to get rid of De'Aaron Fox, but ultimately it's going to have to take a suitor. And that's the problem when you do a max extension before you see how he fits with the organization. They got to the NBA Finals, and now they have serious questions. Like every team that doesn't hoist the Larry O'B, they've got some serious questions. But the thing is, it's a good problem to have because they got Stephon Castle and they got Dylan Harper. And that's what's most befuddling of this of all, is that you had two guys who could take those minutes, De'Aaron Fox, in these last few games. And ultimately, Mitch Johnson just went down with his vet. And I think it cost him.
Yeah, it definitely cost him. I mean, look, I don't have the answer off the top of my head. I mean, I've done some scrolling through the salaries, like high-priced players to target. I don't know who's going to want De'Aaron Fox, and I don't think that answer would be quite clear until after the draft. And so I think that's where it's worth keeping in mind what the nature of this draft class is. It is a guard-heavy draft class. There are a lot of good guards that are going to be drafted in the top 10, in the next 10 picks, in the back end of the first round. There's going to be good quality guards from, you know, Darren Peterson and Darius Acuff, the big names, you know, to Christian Anderson and Bennett Sturts and LeBaron Filon and Abuka Okori, Michael Brown. There's a lot of guards this year. And so if you're a guard needy team, I don't know what you're going to be looking for other than a player in this draft class. Like, I think that's where you're probably investing. So unless it's, I don't know, Miami, but what's Miami giving? I don't know. I don't know the answer for San Antonio, and I don't think that's going to become clear until we really get an idea of where Giannis goes and also where some of these prospects are going to go and who remains guard needy after. It might just be that the Spurs are stuck with them. That might be the reality of it at the end of this. It might just be that the Spurs are stuck with De'Aaron Fox because nobody wants to trade for a 29-year-old point guard who is speed and athleticism reliant and is about to begin a four-year, $221.76 million contract extension. Boy, ugh. That hurts to say. I mean, that's tough.
Well, we've had our eighth champion in 8 years. Maybe the ninth is going to be the Spurs next year.
Could be. Mm-hmm. Fox could be healthy next year.
Could be healthy. Maybe he comes off the bench as the vet.
Yep.
We've seen that before. It's not unprecedented. Andre Iguodala comes to mind with the Golden State Warriors, who just said, look, I on 25 other teams, I'm the starter, but I will come off the bench and be that veteran playmaker off the bench. But he's much better defensively than De'Aaron Fox. And it's part of the problem is at that size, if you don't have your wheels, you become an albatross contract very quickly in this NBA. And we're approaching that point with De'Aaron Fox, where if you don't have that athleticism, end-to-end athleticism, and the three-point shooting just was not there this postseason, it's just going to be really ugly. And I think we have to give the Knicks credit because they had Jalen Brunson as their guy who's not a max player. It is crazy to think that De'Aaron Fox is going to get paid more money next year than Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Jalen Brunson. And that's what the reality is for the San Antonio Spurs. I really believe that the Wemby window was so important that they were getting Victor Wembanyama at a rookie scale contract, and you should absolutely go and get a max contract guy. Kev, they just picked the wrong one.
Yeah, and I think that's right. I mean, with Wemby still on his rookie scale, Castle and Harper still on their rookie scale, it's a good time to take advantage because it's going to get a lot tougher to team build once those guys are all up for their max contracts. And then like with Castle at that point, the conversation now is, oh yeah, young guy in the second year of his career who's a gritty, hard-nosed player. The conversation with him is going to change if in 3 years when he's on a max deal, and he's shooting 30% from three in a series, 37% from the field, going 1-for-10 in a must-win finals game. Suddenly, the conversation at that point will turn from, oh, nice, gritty young player with bright future to, oh, is he way overpaid? And that's where this is the time to take advantage for San Antonio and why they were in this spot in the finals and why, even though it's a great thing for them to be here, getting through Oklahoma City, beating the defending champions, it does still feel like a missed opportunity given how close these games were, given the fact that they choked portions of game two, the pass off the back of Castle. They blow a 29-point lead in game four. They blow a 16-point lead in game five. This series in an alternate universe might be 3-2 San Antonio right now, or maybe San Antonio won it 4-1 in an alternate universe. It was really a close competitive series. And ultimately, for us, you know, if you're not a Knicks fan and you're feeling on a high right now, and if you're a Spurs fan, you're feeling depressed. But for anybody else watching this finals, this was amazing. This was incredible basketball to watch. I had so much fun watching each of these five basketball games, Tom. It was just start to finish, tough, hard-nosed, sometimes prison ball with them swallowing the whistles. It's like they just turned the foul setting off a lot of the time. And I know a lot of people think, oh, maybe it was too much. I loved it. I thought it was so fun. It just felt like the purest form of basketball to me, in my opinion, with this blend of the spacing and the fluidity and the flow of modern basketball, with the toughness and letting these guys play, letting them push. I loved it. I really did. And I hope the NBA takes notes of the massive, massive ratings they had, aside from it just being Knicks and aside from it just being Wemby. I think that also was rooted in just the quality of these games. It felt good to watch, I think, for anybody who's a fan of any generation of basketball.
100%. I thought the officiating, for the most part, letting them play through it was great. But, man, we would have had quite a different post-game show if the Spurs won that game.
I got my notes, my extender notes.
Oh my God, dude. Like the Scott Foster not calling the Victor Wembanyama landing zone foul on Jalen Brunson was one of the most gobsmacking plays I have seen in a long time. The fact that you had a guy, Victor Wembanyama, who is coming into the game, everyone wanting to know if he was going to pick up a flagrant in this, which would have suspended him for the following game. And it was clear as day. This wasn't Josh Hart. This wasn't Landry Shamet. This was Jalen Brunson's ankle. And the king of New York, Captain Clutch, in this game five opportunity, rises up, hits the three-point shot, and then lands on Victor Wembanyama's foot. clearly underneath Jalen Brunson, illegal play, dangerous play. And Scott Foster did not make the call. None of the referees made the call. And unfortunately for the Knicks, it's non-reviewable because there was no call on the floor. So this was just a god-awful play for them, because I think the conversation would have gotten really ugly after the game. The NBA in that instance, by the way, would have had the ability to upgrade that to a flagrant. But Kev, did you believe
would they have? Do you think they would have, Tom?
I don't think they would have. I think they would have said it was a foul, but just like they did in the previous one, they said it was a foul, but it didn't rise to the level of a flagrant, and they would have hid behind that. I really believe that, because
they would have said Brunson unnatural motion extending his leg. That's what they would have said, even though he lands like that all the time. I hate when people say, "Oh, that's unnatural." Shooters land wide all the time. It is natural.
I can't imagine that the league would take Wemby off of it. One thing is Draymond Green, who had a history of these for years. of nut shots.
Wemby developing a little bit of a history in these playoffs, Tom.
It's not the same thing as Draymond Green for years doing it. But yes, he's developing that,
Tom,
kind of.
He did say hard fouls. Remember, hard fouls. Remember that? At the end of a game against OKC? I mean, he is developing a little bit of a reputation. And I like
great,
that,
man.
By the way. I like that Wemby's tough and dirty. I don't want him to be picture perfect golden boy as the face of the league. I want him to be feared and tough. I don't mind this. I don't want dirty players. I don't want players getting hurt because of these actions, of course. But I don't mind one of the best players in the league being like this. You know what I'm saying?
Wanting to elbow dudes in the face because he's so angry. Like, get off
I
of
like
me.
That.
Yeah.
I like this.
I think it's great for the league. Like, Kev, let's take a step back. The New York Knicks are NBA champions, and they just filled up half the bowl in San Antonio on the road. We haven't been in this place as covering the league, that the Knicks are the reigning NBA champions. Let's start there, as what a story that is for the league. Based in New York, all the history in New York. I did a top 10 greatest Knicks of all time ranking last week heading into the series, and I couldn't even put Jalen Brunson in the top three because of how much amazing lore and history there is in the New York Knicks uniform and at Madison Square Garden with Willis Reed, Walt Clyde Frazier, Patrick Ewing, and now Jalen Brunson. They're reigning champions in the NBA. What an amazing story that is. And oh, by the way, Victor Wembanyama is a villain and is going to do the whole spend the off season in the dark, just not able to sleep and just creating this villain role comeback redemption arc. I cannot wait for game one of the season next year, Knicks versus the San Antonio Spurs. I hope De'Aaron Fox is on another team for the Spurs' sake, but I can't wait for the theater, the drama of the league right now. And we're not even talking about the Giannis trade. Already, I cannot wait for next year. We can't really say that about last year. As good as Indiana OKC was, there wasn't as much animosity between those two teams as we have with the NBA Cup. Oh, by the way, our first NBA double, NBA Cup champion and NBA Finals champion to legitimize the NBA Cup. We just had a repeat of these two teams, and it's just beginning because Jalen Brunson's not going anywhere. Karl-Anthony Towns not going anywhere. OG Anunoby, heading into this game, in my opinion, was the Finals MVP, made a couple great defensive plays down the stretch. Yes, he missed a free throw down the stretch, but man, OG Anunoby, They're still young enough that they will be right back in the thick of things next year. I might not put them at number one. We'll see what happens going into next season. But they just uncork the greatest postseason ever in terms of point differential. And Wemby's coming, man. He is going to learn from this. But I still think that he's going to be entering next season as the best player in the NBA. And now he's got a chip on his shoulder. I can't wait.
A couple other things, Tom. So now, Karl-Anthony Towns is a champion. Andrew Wiggins is a champion. You know who's not? Jimmy Butler. They were all teammates once before in Minnesota, and Jimmy Butler infamously, of course, at a practice before an interview with Rachel Nichols, once ripped into those young kids, Andrew Wiggins. He thought he knew how to win. That has been proven not to be the case. Karl-Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins have rings on their fingers. Jimmy Butler still is ringless. And ever since, really, those earlier days in Miami when he did have some great highs in the postseason, has underwhelmed and is one of the most overrated playoff performers in NBA history, Mr. 13 shots per game. Jimmy Butler, I hope he gets back from that torn ACL, gets another opportunity to make a run, whether it's with Golden State or somebody else, because Jimmy at his best is a very fun player. But the way things ended in Minnesota, it is quite something else, maybe a bit of karma in some ways, that you see Andrew Wiggins and Karl-Anthony Towns hoisting that trophy, but not Jimmy Butler.
Yeah. Wow. It did not occur to me that that had happened, but it's a great point.
We'll be right back.
I'll say, Karl-Anthony Towns, I think he might be still the plus-minus leader of this NBA Finals, although wasn't his best performance, certainly not scoring when he finished in this game with 2 points on 7 shots. And Jimmy Butler has just got to be praying that people will remember that rather than him having a championship ring. But he's not. He's got a ring, and Jimmy Butler doesn't. It's a great story arc for Karl-Anthony Towns, the number one overall pick. His experience at Kentucky, I felt that he had a lot more defensive upside that he showed at Kentucky, and thought that his NBA career would be a lot better on that end of the floor. And then just gets this reputation of a guy who's soft defensively, doesn't want to play the five, not willing to play as a rim protector like he was at Kentucky. And he has vindicated and quieted all those doubters now. You can't say that after he was, for much of this postseason, the best player on the New York Knicks. And that's saying something with a guy like Jalen Brunson, who had 45 points in a closeout game. And those stats are hideous. I'm just going to say it. Karl-Anthony Towns, 2 points, 1-7 shooting, fouled out, 5 turnovers. But you can't say that Victor Wembanyama had a poor series in his debut in the NBA Finals and not give credit to Karl-Anthony Towns, who was guarding him more than any other player. And I thought going into this series that OG Anunoby would be the guy. And Karl-Anthony Towns not only took on that assignment, but he did admirably guarding the tallest guy in the NBA and just did a great job of pulling him out of the paint. And I think it goes to show that, like, plus minus captures a lot of things that don't show up in the box score. Pulling a guy out of the paint like Victor Wembanyama with your 3-point shooting, that you're a 40 plus 3-point shooter, that counts in the box score in that plus minus column. You're not going to see that in any other statistical category. And so when he leads in plus minus, that is telling. Because of the function of him on the offensive end, there's just not a lot of guys who can do that consistently, pull a guy like Vic out of the paint as much as he does. I mean, two-way guy who can do that, it's Jokic, Miles Turner at his peak, but not certainly consistently. But the prototype is Karl-Anthony Towns, and he's a champion now and did it with as a Knicks fan growing up. Just what a story for Karl-Anthony Towns, Jalen Brunson. It's just great. It's, you know, as people who cover this league, we get jaded about, you know, the emotional aspect of this game and the story and the character of these players. But it's hard not to root for guys like Karl-Anthony Towns and Jalen Brunson, who had a lot of ties to the New York Knicks organization and Leon Rose, and they finally get over the hump and win the championship in a New York Knicks uniform. I don't know what Manhattan is like right now. I can only imagine. But Kev, this is great for the NBA. It's great for NBA fans. Even if you hate the Knicks, it is way more compelling league right now than it was yesterday.
Well, and this is also a very likable team, regardless of the jersey they're wearing. This is just a likable group of guys. I mean, I think with even the OG Anunoby putback, one of the things we missed on Thursday, I saw someone post this on X, it's pretty remarkable that the putback that he had came from a very similar situation when he was in college and he tore his ACL. He crashed the boards from the left wing and while running into the paint, tore his ACL. Very similar situation to the play in which he had the putback in game four. So like kind of this like cosmic moments where one of the lowest points of his basketball career, it leads to one of the greatest moments. It is the greatest moment of his basketball career in that game four. And like, OG's just such a likable player. He's got Toronto behind him as well. The year the Raptors won the championship, he wasn't able to play because of the surgery he had. And, you know, Mikal Bridges, he fell short with the Suns. Suns fans are always going to love him. Like Karl Anthony Towns from Minnesota. I don't know a Wolves fan that was rooting against Cat. They still really love Cat. I mean, this is a very likable team with guys that came from different situations, from really good fan bases who now won a championship. And they just played a really likable style. They're very tough. They're fun. They keep the ball moving. They found a flow this postseason with Brunson Ball, but also being able to play through Cat and playing with motion, driving kick. It's just a fun basketball team, man. And for them to do it against the Spurs, a team that most people were picking and that were the favorites that took down the defending champions with Wemby, this big, scary monster, 7'7". You know it, Tom. Like, you picked him to go to the finals early on. You were on San Antonio very early. And yet, here we are now with Victor Wembanyama. Victor Wembanyama is on a real trend here of runner-up finishes. You go back to 2019, the FIBA U16 European Championship. He won silver medal, falling to Spain in the finals. 2021, FIBA U19 World Cup with France, took home silver after a two-point loss to the United States. That's the game where he was crying, really mad after he fouled out against Chet Holmgren. 2023, with the Mets 92, they lost in the finals in the French League. 2024, in the Olympics, France, silver medal to Team USA. The NBA Cup. 2025, second place to the Knicks. And then the NBA Finals, 2026, second place to the New York Knicks. So Victor Wembanyama, the number one pick, wears the number one on his jersey, has yet to truly experience the feeling of being a champion at any level of basketball. And that is going to be part of his story here, Tom. Wemby is going to now have to overcome. That's what the story is going to have to be, like it is for many, many great players in the history of basketball. And he hasn't at any other level yet. Whereas a little guy like Brunson has won at every level. He won a high school level. He won two titles at Villanova. He's now an NBA champion. Just different stories, different trajectories. And I can't wait to see the way this story continues to unfold, man. Yeah, this is quite a chapter this was, though.
The New York Knicks are a great example of playing for each other. I think head coaches, basketball coaches are rejoicing today, because even if you're not a Knicks fan, they play the right way. I think it calls back to the 2014 San Antonio Spurs, and the way that they won the championship against the Miami Heat was very reminiscent of that team with Greg Popovich, Boris Diaw, Manu Ginobili, Tim Duncan, Kawhi Leonard, Tony Parker. The way that they played for each other is very reminiscent of this Knicks team. And I think, you know, the winning quality that you have with Jalen Brunson, a winner throughout his entire life, is something that is going to be studied. I think when we talk about winners, when you look at Josh Hart and what he did for this Knicks team, putting his body on the line routinely, getting those threes, getting those opportunities, the offensive rebounds, the rebounds in general, the defense, Mikal Bridges not wanting, you know, 20 shots a game like he had in Brooklyn and wanting something more by downsizing his role and saying, I'd rather play in a winning environment where I'm only taking 10 shots, mid-range shots, open threes, and be kind of this do-it-all player rather than have to be a first option on a team. Same with OG Anunoby, Karl Anthony Towns, all these guys. They could be 20-point scorers on other teams, and they have chosen this challenge with the New York Knicks, the way they move without the ball. There are a few possessions tonight where the ball was humming, and then when it came down to crunch time, It was Captain Clutch. Isaiah Thomas, the Detroit Piston, is certainly smiling right now about the idea that, you know, you can't win at the highest levels. Becky Hammon famously saying Jalen Brunson can't be the best player on a championship team. He's just too small. And 45 points tied for the most in a clinch game on the road to Michael Jordan says differently. 45 points Ooh. In this game, Michael Jordan and Jalen Brunson, the most on the road in a clinching game in the NBA Finals. Just an incredible performance. And I think basketball coaches everywhere are going to crunch the tape on the New York Knicks and show their teams for a very long time what it's like, what it looks like to play winning basketball. Because that is a team full of guys who on other teams would be getting a lot more points per game, but came to the Knicks because they wanted to win, and they did ultimately more than anybody else in NBA history with that point differential.
Real quick, Tom, going to circle back to something we talked about earlier. I was doing a quick scroll of player salaries. Some Fox targets for you, okay? Give me a yes or no to each of these names as a De'Aaron Fox trade partner from the Spurs' perspective. So from San Antonio's perspective, do you want to target this player? Yes or no? Zion Williamson.
Yes.
Franz Wagner with a bunch of picks as well, like giving up a lot with Fox. Michael Porter Jr.
Both of those guys are playmakers at the four, which I think is something that they need. That like they have the guard play, they have the shooters. What they don't have is that guy like Julius Randle for what the Knicks were.
Randle is on my list. Randle's on the list. Let's bring him in. Julius Randle. That's a tough one, right?
Oh man, De'Aaron Fox at the max or Julius Randle at what's his number going forward? Let's see. Julius Randle. I mean, he's going to be a 33 million. If you give me Julius Randle and Dante DiVincenzo, you know, they wouldn't do it. Minnesota wouldn't do it. I mean, you got to
Randle has 2 years left with a player option for the year after next. That's a tough one.
That's a tough one. Go to the next one. Let me think on that.
Michael Porter Jr.
Yes. Yes.
Tyler Hero.
No.
No. Okay. That's about
it's
it.
It's just
that's all I get for you. It's not much else.
Tyler Hero, for me, it's just a lot of redundancy. I want more of a passer. If you're going to give me a guy, Zion, Franz Wagner, those make sense because at the four position, you want more playmaking next to Wemby. But they do lack that. Like when you're relying on Julian Champagne to be your four, Vassell to be your four, you might want a little bit more size. I mean, Zion on this team would be sensational. I would love to have that big swing for the San Antonio Spurs. And maybe Joe Dumars just looks at a guy like De'Aaron Fox and says that's an opportunity to buy low. But that's a huge contract. I can't imagine they would do that, but maybe they would.
Yeah. And plus they already have DeJounte Murray as well. And he was pretty solid to finish the year after coming back from his ruptured Achilles too. So a little bit of overlap there with a Murray Fox backcourt. I don't know. I'm not expecting Dumars to do anything super bright necessarily given his tenure so far. So I mean, like Sacramento, I don't think they'd want Fox back. They're gonna try to draft a guard, whether it's Darius Akef or somebody else. Like I said, there's just not a lot of teams that need a guard or would want a veteran guard making that type of money, and any team that does need a guard is probably gonna draft one because take your pick, there's a lot of them in this year's draft class. So that's going to be a big, 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 big storyline for San Antonio, unless you have Brian Wright come out and pull a Mitch Johnson. Mitch Johnson said before game 5, we're still going to play through De'Aaron Fox at the end of the game. They did 0-4. He sunk it up. If Brian Wright comes out at his exit interview with the Spurs and says, De'Aaron Fox is our guy and we're sticking with him. Well, good luck to San Antonio if that's what they decide to do, especially given the potential ascent we could see from Dylan Harper next year. I mean, look, San Antonio, they're a young team. Good for them to make it to the finals this year. like getting through Oklahoma City, getting through Minnesota, teams that are grizzled and been through deep runs before. But ultimately, this Knicks team, man, they were a special, special group. 13 wins in a row. And then they drop one, and then they win their final two to win it all, man. I'm always going to remember this series for that game four. Still, like, to me, it felt like the Knicks won the championship that night. Maybe many years from now, I'll remember this series as if they had won it that night. But I think it's pretty cool that they won that series, won that game, 29-point comeback at home at Madison Square Garden, a party for 20 minutes after the game, nobody leaving, just constant goosebumps. I'll never forget that feeling, that game four at MSG. But then to go to game five on the road in San Antonio with 40 to 50% of the crowd being your fans traveling to the game to support you, and winning it in San Antonio, winning all three games on the road in the series, just hell of a team, man. I mean, I can't think of an example of a recent champion like this. 53 wins is like no joke. I'm not dismissing what they did during the season, but this up and down team all year long, you're in, you're out, you're in, you're out. Like, I had Jonathan Macri on, the great Knicks podcaster from Knicks Film School, a couple weeks ago before the finals began. And he's like, you know, people were on me because, you know, he said they were on me because I said around deadline time, I'm done with this team. I can't wait until they blow it up this summer. That's the type of year it was for the Knicks. And then for them just to roll, they steamrolled through the East, and then they beat the Spurs, a 60-plus win team, in five games. I've never seen a turnaround like this, Tom. This is crazy to me that this is actually the way they did end up winning it.
Think about this. They could lose the next game just in a hypothetical situation. The Knicks could have lost game six by 52 points, and they would still have the best point differential in NBA history.
Wow.
They have plus 283. Wow. They've outscored the opponent in this postseason run by 283 points. The best ever we've ever seen was the Golden State Warriors in 2016-17 season with Kevin Durant and Stephen Curry. They outscored opponents in 16-1 record, but plus 230. This Knicks team is at 283. So they're 53 points better than the greatest point differential we've ever seen, this New York Knicks team. And you can't just say it was an easy East. They just took down the San Antonio Spurs in five games, a team that beat the reigning champion, Oklahoma City Thunder. And I'm going to update two things after this. I'm going to update my all-time greatest Knicks column that I did. Stay tuned of where I have Jalen Brunson. I had him at fourth going into this series. Given that he won a championship, we'll see if I'm willing to put him over Pat Ewing now. I'm also going to update the asterisk column. Kev.
Your asterisk column triggers everybody. It's so funny every single time. What's hey, the asterisk for
Jalen Williams and AJ Mitchell, if they're healthy, if the Thunder are healthy and they beat the Spurs, I'm trying to keep a straight face here.
Oh, boy.
If they're healthy and beat the Spurs, the Knicks didn't beat the defending champion. They didn't beat Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. They didn't beat the best team in the NBA this year. That's the Oklahoma City Thunder. And if Jalen Williams and AJ Mitchell don't go down in that series, they beat the Spurs, and then the New York Knicks, it's a whole different story. So De'Aaron Fox missed two games in the Western Conference Finals. Come on.
That one's
against
a
healthy De'Aaron Fox, Kev.
Yeah. You got to keep them coming, Tom. Yeah, you got to keep them coming.
How do you put an asterisk on this one? That it's going to be really tough.
It's tough.
For all the doubters who are like, oh, it's too easy in the East. They just beat the Western Conference team. For those who said it was, you know, the next time James Harden, Donovan Mitchell, it doesn't matter who they face. They come out on top. And so it's they just outscored the KD Warriors by 53 points in point differential. It's insane.
Crazy. Crazy. Tom, what a year, man. I mean, this is a hell of a playoff. I had a lot of fun. Part of me is disappointed that it's over. because this is such a great series. Could he use two more of these? Part of me is happy the way it ended, you know, because I think, you know, it's like a TV series. Sometimes it goes on a little too long and it doesn't end the way it began. And this one from 1 through 5, this was a 10 out of 10 finals for me. I know like it doesn't necessarily compare to some of the 7-game series, right? Like we saw 3-1 come back a decade ago with Cleveland over Golden State. Last year we had theatrics between Indiana and Oklahoma City. Like a 7-game series is always the best, but this was a 10 out of 10 5-game series with some truly memorable games that I'll always remember moving forward for a Knicks team. It just feels fitting the way they won this one in the manner that they did. And look, the East wins again. The East gets another finals. Last year it was OKC, but 2 out of 3 years now, the Eastern Conference has come out on top, Tom. Conference imbalance seems to be a thing during the full regular season, but not so much during the NBA Finals with some of the best teams in the league. So just something to keep in mind when it comes to assessing these teams moving forward. I can't wait till the summer, man. How are teams going to reload? What are they going to do? When are we going to get a Giannis trade? Could there be other surprises? Could there be other big name players on the move? Is Detroit going to do something, or are they going to wait till next year to trade their picks? Are they going to wait till next year? Is Cleveland going to make big moves? Are they going to dangle Mobley? Are they going to flip Jared Allen? Or what are they going to do? Is there a surprise out there for Atlanta? I remember I had Tim Bontemps on my podcast a few weeks ago at the beginning of the NBA Finals, and I said to him, nobody's talking about Atlanta. 46 wins. They have the 8th pick and the 23rd pick this year. They can get in some action here to bolster their roster and take a big step next season. Miami, Orlando, Charlotte, they have a bunch of picks. And never mind everybody in the Western Conference. What's the Thunder going to do? What are the Lakers going to do? Where's LeBron James going to go? I mean, there's just so much that could happen this offseason. Houston, how much are they going to mix it up? Minnesota, they seem to be wanting to make big moves. Is Denver going to do anything? Are they going to reload around Jokic? This could be a transformative NBA offseason, Tom. And I can't wait to see how it all unfolds. I think the league is going to look dramatically different a month from now than it does today. And so much of it's just going to be unpredictable. And I just can't wait to see the way it all unfolds. In some ways, we're just getting started, right? Right? The finals are over. Draft around the corner. 10 days from now, I can't wait. This is an awesome draft. And then it's going to be a crazy offseason to go. I'm fired up, Tom. We're just getting started, baby.
Yeah, lock in that Yahoo NBA YouTube channel because we got a lot more content coming. The NBA draft show, all the stuff that we got coming this offseason.
You're on it, right, Tom? You're on it, right?
Oh, yeah.
The NBA. Hell yeah, baby. Yeah, Tom and I are going to be live during the NBA drafts. Of course, we're going to be doing pods, many pods. I got a lot of draft stuff coming prior to that. But Tom and I know we'll be live on draft night. Boy. I can't wait till the draft. It's going to be a really fun one. Cool. Who knows? Well, maybe we'll get a Giannis trade by my next podcast on Monday. Or maybe that's going to wait a little while. We'll see about that. Tom, been an awesome season with you, man. Podcasting all the time. And we get some fun off-season pods coming up as well. But always good to chat with you, Tom. And this has been a hell of a lot of fun. So thank you, Tom. Appreciate you coming on again tonight to recap an awesome NBA Finals.
Yeah. Congrats to the New York Knicks. An incredible historic run that went all the way to the very end. We were so blessed with 5 games all down to the wire in this NBA Finals. Larry David, congratulations that you didn't have to go to or think about going to a game 6 at Madison Square Garden. So we're all happy for Larry. Yeah.
And a congrats to Adam Silver. You don't have to make a decision on whether to retroactively give Wemby a flagrant. Big congratulations. Jalen Brunson bailed you out big time from having to make decision.
Big time. He didn't have to think about that finals MVP trophy. It was like, I don't even care how the voters go. I am giving this to Jalen Brunson for letting me off the hook on that decision. Incredible season, man. I had a blast. Can't wait for the draft. And can't wait to do this again soon.
Me too, Tom. Thank you so much for joining me, Tom. Thank you to everybody for watching us live on YouTube. We'll be live again. I mean, if there's a a breaking trade emergency podcast. Be sure to subscribe to Yahoo NBA if you have not done so already, and hit the little bell icon if you want to get notifications for our live podcast, live videos as well. So thank you to everybody in the live YouTube chat, and thank you to everybody on the audio side for listening to us. I'll be back again on Monday. Thank you to Emmy and the whole team at Yahoo for producing all of our shows this entire NBA season. We're just getting started. The off season begins next. So thank you, everybody. Have a good rest of your night. Enjoy the weekend.